Nächster Halt, Universität.
Welcome to this special screening of Killers of the Flower Moon. My name is Janusz Buschke. I'm a PhD student at the University of Konstanz at the Department of American Studies. And I would like to welcome you on behalf of the whole department. And I'd also like to welcome you on behalf of the Off the Road project, which is also taking place at the University of Konstanz, of which I am a part, and which is headed by Professor Timo Müller, who is sitting in the first row up here. Our project is basically about how early automobility changed ideas and perceptions of the environment. And so since we're very much interested in automobility, we are also interested in gasoline, and by extension, we are also interested in oil. My own research also focuses on oil in American fiction at the beginning of the 20th century. So I'm very excited to share this movie with you because I also work on a novel, which I'm going to be talking about in just a bit, which is also about the Osages and the Osage murders in the early 1920s. I was supposed to be here, I'm here by myself right now. I was supposed to be here with my colleague Melanie Frey. Unfortunately, she just caught COVID 2 days ago. And so just anyway, she did so much in terms of the organization. I would like to thank her here in front of all of you for making this happen. Without her, this wouldn't have been possible. Yeah, Melanie also did most of the research into the historical background, so bear with me as I try to replace her as best as I can. Just to give you a brief introduction into who the Osages were, they were quite a curious Native American tribe and exceptional in many ways, so I want to give you, like, paint you a picture of who they were so you have a better sense of what the movie will be about. The Osages lived on land in Oklahoma in 1897, when oil was discovered on their land. As a result of this oil, they got rich very quickly, practically overnight, and they used their money well. They drove expensive cars, they built big houses, they bought fancy clothes, and in a way, they were very different from what the typical American thought of Native Americans at the time. And this was not supposed to have happened. Their wealth that they got from oil obviously wasn't meant to be in the eyes of many white Americans. They were originally living in lands in what is today Missouri, Kansas, and Arkansas, but then in 1872, they were relocated to new land in Oklahoma, and this land in Oklahoma was basically thought to be worthless. It was rocky terrain, it was difficult to farm, they couldn't produce anything, and just in the first few years, from about having a population of about 3,500, their population sank down to 1,000 because so many were starving and they didn't have a lot of financial income. With the discovery of oil in 1897, all of this was supposed to change. They were supposed to be financially independent and not be reliant on farming anymore. But of course, with a lot of oil wealth, there also came people from the outside who wanted to have their share and who also believed that indigenous people were not entitled to oil and all the money that they got with it. This eventually led to a series of murders, which we're going to see in the film too. It is today estimated that about 60 Osages died during this time in the early 1920s, which was also called the Reign of Terror because so many of them died. But there are also more recent investigations which believe that there were up to 100 Osages that died, the difference in the number just being because so many murders were believed to be covered up or misreported. And so all of this is basically in David Grant's book, which I brought with you. I know there's so many of you here, you probably can't see it, but I'm gonna show it anyway. This is the book that the movie is based on, Killers of the Flower Moon, The Osage Murders and the Birth of the FBI by David Grant, which was published in 2007 to a lot of critical acclaim, actually. And it's written in a kind of murder mystery, which tries to give you like a realistic depiction of what happened to the Osages. But it's also, you know, very dramatized and narrativized. But it does provide a fresh look at a chapter in the American past, which is commonly pretty overlooked and not really considered. The book is about the Osage family of Molly Burkhart, which we will also see in the film. The family owned lots of head rights, which I'm going to explain to you in a second, because the book does a good job of explaining what head rights are, but the movie doesn't really, and it's important to sort of understand the conflict that we're seeing in the movie. So Molly Burkhart's family owned lots of these head rights, and head rights were basically this is the historical background, so bear with me here for a moment. The Osages were unique in the sense that they protected their mineral rights communally, which meant that not any one member of the tribe could own or sell oil. Everything had to go through the tribe, and there was no way for individual people to sell it. That meant that prospectors, Americans who wanted to drill for oil, had to pay the tribe, and the tribe then allocated the money to the Osages who were officially enrolled. This made it very difficult for white Americans to get to Osage oil, at least not without having to pay the tribe so much. And so what the federal government in 1906 is introduced the Allotment Act. That basically meant that if you can imagine the reservation, it was basically divided into different parcels of land. And everyone who could prove to the American government that they were Osages by ancestry, they were then giving a parcel of this land. And with this land came a head right. And the head right basically meant that you could participate in tribal elections. And it also meant that you would get a share of the money that the entire tribe got for selling their oil. So owning a head right basically meant that you were rich at the time. It meant that you had land, and that land would be used to drill for oil, and that oil money would go into your pockets. Head rights, very importantly, could not be sold or bought. They could only be inherited, which basically meant that in order for non-Osage people to get these head rights, they had to marry into Osage families, and then, as we'll see in the movie, try to kill them off and then inherit the head rights from the Osages. This is at the center of the movie that we're going to watch, so this was important to get across. And the second system, which is also discussed, or which is shown in the movie but not explained so well, is the guardianship system. The guardianship program basically came about as a result of a long history of racist rhetoric about indigenous people. They were usually referred to as uncivilized and savage and irresponsible, and that meant that, or so the government claimed, that they had to be assigned a white guardian, which is basically a representative who would then sort of represent them in terms of finances and law, so they could rule and sanction every financial decision that Osages made. And so this guardianship system was basically a very lucrative deal for white Americans. And once they became a guardian, they could more easily marry into Osage families and more easily get to the oil. So you can see the government had lots of policies in place, which maybe not intentionally, but in some way made it easier for white Americans to get Osage oil, and by consequence, because of the head right and guardianship systems, it made it very lucrative financially to kill Osages, marry into Osage families, and then kill them so they could inherit all of this. This is basically at the center of the movie, and the movie has been received pretty well by film critics, but there have also been lots of critical voices, especially voiced by the Native American community. Some of the gripes with the movie are, first of all, obviously it's hard to watch such violence against your people, but also the depiction of the FBI, which some say is too much at the center of the film, whereas they would like to see more about the role of the government and sort of the policies that they created to dispossess Native people. And maybe most importantly of all, I know, and this will be also at the beginning of the movie, I don't know if any of you have seen it before, but Martin Scorsese did go out of his way to consult Osages and bring in Osage perspectives. And the book by David Grand does this too, having lots of interviews. But at the end of the day, Native American perspectives, especially Native American religion and spirituality, are not really on display in this movie. So I would like to show you, since it's not in the movie, I would like to give you a quick overview of some novels that have been written about the Osages and the Osage murders, which are of interest to me because I write about them. And might be of interest to you too. And I brought them with me, so I know you can't see so well, but I'm gonna show them anyway. Hold on 1 second. So the first one is Sundown, which is a novel by John Joseph Matthews. And John Joseph Matthews was an Osage himself. He was born in Pawhuska, which is basically the capital of the Osage Nation and the city that became the oil town, the oil capital of the Osage Nation. He published this novel in 1934, so that's a pretty early, basically the most immediate response to the Osage oil boom and the Osage murders. While the book is not directly about the Osage murders, it is more about how indigenous lives can be possible in a modern world. I'm sure many of you have come across Native American studies know that the stereotype typically goes that Native Americans are a thing of the past, which is often used as a kind of rhetoric to displace them and dispossess them. And he's sort of working against this stereotype or this rhetoric in this novel. The second one I want to show you is more recent. It's from 1990, and it's called Mean Spirit by Linda Hogan. Linda Hogan is also, she's not an Osage, but she's Native American. Her father is a Chickasaw, and even today, Linda Hogan works as a writer in residence at the Chickasaw Nation, which means she teaches creative writing to indigenous people in the reservation. This book is much more about the murders than Sundown, and it does also include the involvement of the FBI, which will become a major part of the film as well. It has a pretty cool twist on the whole FBI thing, because in this novel, there's a Native American investigator who works for the FBI in Washington and then returns to the Native reservation in Oklahoma to investigate the murders. And in the process, he sort of sees the corruption in the FBI and the system and leaves the FBI eventually and reconnects with his own people and his ancestral land. So these are some alternative perspectives to the movie. I hope that you will enjoy the movie. I hope that the movie will make you want to read these books too, because they do provide something extra. And if you like the topic, they're for sure worthy of checking out. With that, again, I would like to welcome you all. I would like to thank the Sepra Kino for making this possible and for this beautiful cooperation. Thank you very much, and enjoy the movie.
Endhaltestelle. Wir bitten alle Fahrgäste auszusteigen.
B ist ein Podcast des Kim Lecture Recording im Auftrag der Stufe und des Asters der Universität Konstanz.